From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made on October 29th of last year when the National League of Cities selected four American cities for the 2016 ROSE Fellowship. ROSE Fellow Cities are attempting to find creative solutions for land use challenges. And here's the list of 2016 cities: Denver, Long Beach, California, Birmingham, Alabama, and Rochester. Rochester applied for the ROSE Fellowship with the goal of tackling the following local land use challenges: the Broad Street Aqueduct, the Genesee Riverfront, and Main Street. And today we've got the chance to talk to some people from the city who are going to work on those parts of Rochester as we go forward with this project. And we're also going to talk to some guests who just got into town last night visiting Rochester as part of the 2016 National League of Cities ROSE Fellowships. And we're going to talk to them about, what they're finding here and how the various cities are going to work together to try to learn from one another. Let me welcome my guests in studio here from the city of Rochester. Bea Mohammed's here, and Bea is the Commissioner of Department of Neighborhood and Business Development for the city of Rochester. Bea, nice to have you here.
Thank you, Devin.
Kevin Kelly is here. Kevin's a senior community housing planner for the Housing Division in the Department of Neighborhood and Business Development for the city of Rochester, also a ROSE Fellowship project manager. It's a mouthful. Nice to have you, Kevin.
Great to be here.
Rest of the hour, I'm just going to call you a city planner, and you said that's fine.
That's fine.
That's very good. Nice to have you here as well. Nadine Fogarty's here, Vice President of Strategic Economics in Berkeley, California. Nadine, welcome to Rochester.
Thank you very much.
And Gideon Berger's here. Gideon is the Program Director of the Daniel ROSE Fellowship Program at the ROSE Center for Public Leadership and Land Use. Gideon, nice to have you as well.
Thanks.
Gideon, I want to start with the man who just got into town last night. Let me ask you and Nadine how Rochester ended up on this list to begin with here, because we've got four cities on the 2016 list. You said this is the seventh year you've been doing this. How did Rochester end up on the list?
So you could tell from that list of cities that geography is important. We want to sort of have a balance from cities around the country. We also look at the city's market. And we like to sort of have a mix of weak, strong, and emerging market types in the program. So the cities can kind of have the opportunity to learn from each other and see those different types of conditions. And then we also sort of look at election cycles, each year that sort of plays out. So in our seventh year in the program, we wanted to continue to find other cities in the Northeast that could be fun to work with, and Rochester certainly what we would call an emerging market city.
Okay. And, you know, our listeners probably are immediately wondering, what does this mean? Does this mean more resources for these kind of developments? I mean, money? Does it mean partnership? What's it mean?
So it definitely means free advice, which is, you know, you could take or leave. But also there's a professional development angle to it as well. So the participants in the program, we invited Mayor Lovely Warren, and she selected Bea. She also selected the Planning and Zoning Director, Zena Lagonegro, as well as Ann De Silva Tella from Bea's department to be part of the program. And they get to go to other cities and help advise them in the program. So there's a peer-to-peer aspect. And in this day and age, if you're in the business of city building, at the ROSE Center, we really think it's important to go to other places to learn from them and get ideas.
Absolutely. And Bea, have you traveled yet, or is that all coming up later this year?
Oh, no, I've traveled. I went to Puerto Rico. I just recently left Denver, and we were in Nashville in, I believe, October?
November.
Yeah. In November.
Okay. And, you know, a city like Denver, for example, a little bit of a different size.
Mm-hmm.
But how do you, when you're working on these kind of projects, how do you try to learn lessons from other cities, especially if they're not exactly the same size as Rochester?
Well, our study area in Denver, the West Colfax area, has similar challenges as we do in Rochester. We'll be looking at, you mentioned Main Street. The Colfax area has some of the same challenges, even though there's more development, but they have challenges with, you know, how do we activate it? There'll be new developments coming up. So we do too. We have Midtown. We have Sibley. We have new hotels coming online, but we still are missing the element of play very much, and we want to spur economic development.
In other words, it sounds like if we just look at Rochester and Denver, we say, well, that may be apples and oranges city size, but you're saying there's a component of Denver that looks reasonably like ours, that has reasonably plenty of parallels, in other words.
Yeah, I believe I've done a lot of traveling in my life. I believe you can go to any city mm-hmm. and see similarities. It's important to travel to get other ideas, and that's why this fellowship is a blessing, the relationship between the Urban Land Institute and the National League of Cities. I personally, and I know the mayor and all of our staff here, I feel really blessed for this opportunity to learn, because we need to just bring back the ideas and so we can grow.
Okay, well, Gideon and Nadine got in last night. Nadine, what are you hoping to learn and accomplish on this visit to Rochester?
Oh, gosh. I think, first of all, I'm just really excited to be here. And so obviously we've been asked to look at the public realm and the river and Main Street and think about how that relates to economic development. That's one of my favorite things to think about, and what types of short-term investments you might make versus long-term investments, or what you could do that's big or small that helps to link everything together and really help to revitalize the downtown.
Are you seeing any, I mean, you've been here less than 24 hours, I don't want to quiz you too much here, but but what makes this city sort of unique is not the right word, but a lot of people are sometimes scratch their heads and they'll say, we've got this great waterfall, not a whole lot's going on there, but 15 years ago there was an effort to kind of create a district right near where we are right now, didn't really stick. So, you know, I suspect you've seen cities across the country where there have been varying degrees of success on waterfronts, and I guess maybe you bring some perspective about why certain things are working and why certain things are not?
Oh, it's an interesting question. You know, I think it's about how the land uses, to me, it's about how the land uses relate to the waterfront that's nearby. And each place, like especially downtowns, they have their own unique character and their own unique assets that they can build on. So it's about having enough critical mass of something going on in that area that the waterfront can actually be a place that means something to people. And it's not, people aren't just going there for the waterfront, but there's also other activities in the area.
Okay. Now, Kevin Kelly, a city planner at the City of Rochester, if Rochester is successful with this endeavor, if you learn a lot from this, being one of the Rose Cities, and if you can develop these parts of our city, what changes and when? I mean, everybody wants overnight success, and that's silly, but kind of give me your outlook on what this might actually mean going forward.
So we're looking for, you know, some really creative and strategic solutions for these parts of downtown from an economic development point of view, but also looking at public spaces. And I think, you know, there's sort of this conventional narrative that retail follows residential, and we've just seen a dramatic increase in development in the downtown area on the residential side, and that's fantastic, and we welcome that, and we're going to see more of it. But what we're looking for is sort of the next phase of the resurgence of downtown and the retail, the restaurants, the entertainment, the everyday goods and services that folks are, you know, now that they're living in downtown, this is what they're looking for, you know, like a Hart's grocery store, which is a fantastic example. We want to see more of that. And there is some of that happening in the downtown area. But sort of the impetus for this project is recognizing that three of our most visible assets in the city, the aqueduct, the river, and Main Street, don't necessarily have that evening and weekend activity. So we want to find ways to usher in that next phase of development so that people's perception of downtown, which is, you know, affected by the state of those three assets, is, you know, could be improved by seeing more development in those corridors.
Why haven't we had development in those corridors the way you think we could?
Well, I think it tends to happen, you know, where critical mass starts to emerge, like you see in the East End, and we have a lot happening there. And you mentioned the High Falls District, which didn't take off as an entertainment district like we had hoped. But now the vacancies are pretty low because it's taken off as, you know, startup businesses and media, a lot of media companies here. So it didn't turn into what we thought it would be. But organically over time, it turned into something else, and now it's succeeding. But in terms of, you know, why it isn't showing up just yet on Main Street, well, it's not an all or nothing thing. There is some activity, some development happening on Main Street. But, you know, there's a lot of visual blight on Main Street that is, I think, affecting people's perception and their desire to be on certain parts of Maine, and then there's other parts that are doing quite well.
In the coming weeks on this program, we're going to be talking about downtown and city, higher-end housing, you know, different levels of apartments and condos and things to own, things to rent, because we've had some listeners say, boy, I feel like every few months we see something else that's coming into the downtown space or parts of the city, and is there really demand for that? Is it happening? You're saying that the residential is showing up. Even if the retail hasn't gotten there yet, the residential is showing up there, yes?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's surprised quite a few of us to the degree that it's shown up. And the prices that folks are willing to pay for apartments has surprised quite a few, but we're running with it. And the developers, we have a lot of really great developers in this town that are taking a lot of risks. They're the frontiersmen, so to speak, for this downtown area, and they're finding a lot of success in converting these historic buildings. And people are paying. Tower 280 is a great example of the surprise that we're pleasantly receiving here in downtown.
Sure. And so if the setup that you kind of frame for us, which is residential and then retail, if that's the setup, then we're getting the residential part. So Kevin and Bale, we should be seeing more retail. And it sounds like it's happening. Tower 280 is something you just mentioned. But should we expect in the next year to see a lot more signs of the retail that's starting to follow the residential, Bale?
Yeah, I think we should. There's plans for 280. There's restaurant plans. We're hearing companies that want to go in and develop some empty buildings on Main Street. But I think what we have to do on the government side, we have to create the atmosphere, the culture that people are willing to invest in the city. And I believe, with the leadership of Mayor Warren, we are doing that, and we'll continue to do that.
Before I kick it back to our guests from out of town for a little perspective that they can bring on this, I go back to something Kevin just mentioned, and you just mentioned what you think the government role should be, kind of shepherding more development here. Is there a lesson from, and I keep saying 15 years ago, I thought it was around 2001, 2003, back at the time where they were really trying to push High Falls as sort of an entertainment district. Is there a lesson there that you use the term organically? Since that, essentially that failure as an entertainment district, organically, we've seen companies want to be there. Is there a lesson that you don't want to push too hard winners and losers, that an organic development is better, Kevin, than forcing an entertainment district or forcing a business district or forcing a residential district?
Yeah, I mean, when it comes to sort of trying to create an identity for a place and a brand, so to speak, there's a limit to what, the city government's involvement should be. I mean, there's some things that can be done, but really want to nurture what happens at the grassroots level in neighborhoods in certain parts of downtown. But in terms of, the lesson learned from that, it's not just about whether it was done right or done wrong. It's also about timing. And right now the timing is such that there is a growing interest from different portions of the population that just want to be downtown, whether they want to live there, work there, or just visit there quite a bit. And, the simple story is that it's about millennials and empty nesters at this point. And we're embracing that trend that's happening in literally every city in the country, and we're seeing it now in Rochester.
Okay. So I want to ask someone like Nadine Fogarty, who's the Vice President of Strategic Economics in town from Berkeley, and they're talking about this evolution that happens with residential and then retail. First of all, fair setup there?
Absolutely. Yeah, we're seeing that as he was saying, all across the country in different downtowns.
But I imagine in some places there is a debate on, well, how do you get somebody downtown if you don't have retail first? And so Rochester is interesting. As Kevin and Bea said, there's so much that has been happening in recent years here. And I've heard the conversation come up a number of times where people say, is there really demand, or is looking at other development, and how is that happening? So it is happening, and then maybe the retail follows. But is this a problem or at least a challenge in cities where you have these questions on, well, how do you get somebody to live downtown or to move here if you don't have the amenities yet you want to offer?
Absolutely. I mean, it's definitely a challenge, but I think what we're seeing here in Rochester is very consistent with so many other places that I've worked across the country. We're at this very interesting time right now with regard to retail in the United States, where we've, even 10 years ago or 15 years ago, the way that we thought about what type of retail should be downtown was really different. Now, with increasing internet sales and shifts in the way that retail is with what kind of bricks and mortar retail exists and where it exists, we're seeing downtowns become much more places that are tend to be geared towards entertainment and restaurants, as opposed to the type of retail that we traditionally associate with downtowns and department stores and shoe stores and things like that. So that type of retail tends to be more local. And it tends to be more interesting, and it tends to come in after the residential is already there, because it's partly local serving and it's partly destination.
Okay. Gideon, you're nodding. You want to jump in there?
Yeah. I mean, I think our experience with the city of Oakland a few years ago in this program was a great example of that. It's in Nadine's backyard. But Oakland, under Jerry Brown, when he was their mayor, had a goal of creating 10,000 new residential units downtown in an effort to bring that vibrancy back to its downtown. And they were largely successful in doing that. And then they were really frustrated when they came, when we invited them to be in the program, because they didn't have the retail that they wanted, the comparison good shopping and some of the destination retail. And they sort of came to us originally with this question of, how do we attract Target and all these other big retailers to come to our downtown? Do we need to bulldoze all of our existing buildings to make room for them? And we you know, our folks who advised them in the program felt that would be sort of a tragic mistake to do that. And instead, we sort of encouraged them to focus on growing their own organic retail market in the city. And they really embraced the idea of pop-ups, which had already sort of been starting to happen in Oakland before we came there. And that sort of led to this whole great renaissance, both on the retail side as well as the restaurant side, where Oakland started to become this destination for people all over the Bay Area on Broadway, which was the corridor we were focused on in Oakland. And it was really amazing to kind of see that transformation. Now, timing, I think Kevin mentioned, was really important because the market conditions in that metro area were pushing investment and people to the East Bay from San Francisco. But they were able to exploit that and take advantage of it in a way that maybe they hadn't during previous economic boom cycles.
All right. Now, when it comes to the shift in retail that Nadine was just talking about, especially 10 to 15 years, if it's a little less of a big box store, and not, you know, it doesn't mean those are going away, certainly not in our area yet. But if there's a bit of a shift going on, and this is a totally ignorant question, you guys can help me with this, does it change the outlook for a tax base or for what, you know, governments should expect in terms of the way people spend money and what comes back to government, et cetera? Does that change anything, Nadine?
It does. It absolutely does. I mean, we're, you know, people purchase a lot of goods online now. It doesn't mean, you're right, it doesn't mean that we don't still have things like Target, but it does mean that
Costco.
Or Costco.
Things like that.
For example.
There was a time when people thought that grocery stores were going to become online mostly, too. And so we're seeing the limits
of that. Order
right
and they drive out. Yeah, right. So.
Yeah, but people always want to go to restaurants. You know, you're not going to order your restaurant online, although you will sometimes order food online. But that's going to be a local business, and same thing with entertainment. And that's the kind of those are the types of uses that we're seeing in downtowns.
And if you look at Park Ave or East Ave, the small boutique stores, you can walk in that store and purchase something you'll never see it again. Me personally, I like that. I like to go out and I won't see anybody else with what I have on or the ring or that I bought. And really, that's the type of business that we would want to see. Kevin mentioned the organic growth, the local entrepreneur here that is looking for a space downtown or wherever in the city. That's what we're really trying to support.
The Parklees, the arenas, that kind of thing. You know, is that generally what you're kind of talking about? The unique offerings like
yes.
that.
Yes. When I go to a city, I want to purchase whatever is, you know, the staple of the city, whether that's some of the food, whether that's drink, or whether that's a T-shirt. I want to bring something back from the city that's unique, and I can look in my house and say, that came from Rochester, New York.
All right, listeners, I see the phone ringing, and I should let you know if you want to join the conversation. We welcome you to do that. It's toll-free, 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. If you're just joining us, let's reset why we're here. And Gideon, remind our listeners essentially what Rose Cities are. Rochester's on the 2016 list with three others. And why don't you remind our listeners who are just joining us why we're here today?
So Rochester is one of a class of four cities with Denver, Birmingham, and Long Beach that the Rose Center invites every year to help with an urban redevelopment challenge in their city. And in addition to giving them lots of free advice, we have a peer-to-peer aspect of the program where they assist each other, which is really important for public officials because they sometimes forget why they get into this business in the first place, which is because they love cities.
Well, let me grab our first phone call for the hour here, and Sean in Rochester is first up. Go ahead, Sean.
Hey, Evan. You know, I've been wondering, because I've been doing a little research about buying a building in the city, I've been wondering what the city government is doing to make a lot of these buildings that have extremely delinquent taxes available to people who want to buy them and do something with them. Because, you know, I keep hitting roadblocks with, you know, these buildings aren't available, the taxes are back, you know, 5, 6, 7 years. And it looks like the tax debt is actually sold to a company in Long Island. I mean, you know, can't we do something to get these buildings into the hands of people who actually care?
Sean, thanks for the phone call. Kevin, Bea, you want to start? Go ahead, Bea.
Yeah, and that's something that's been a slow process. We just recently had a tax foreclosure sale, I believe, a couple months ago. Unfortunately, many of those structures are not commercial, but they are. But that is something we're trying to move back in-house now, and hopefully we'll have a little bit more success in the future.
Okay. Let me get back to the phones, and next up is Jack in Rochester. Go ahead, Jack.
Yes, the question is violence. Do other cities, it seems every night there's a murder in the Rochester area. Is that addressed in order to develop the city?
Well, Jack, there's not a murder every night in Rochester. I spent many years in commercial television news, and I understand why people have a perception of that. But often I think in the news media presents information without a whole lot of context. Doesn't mean there's not some violence. There certainly, and I'm sure our city leaders who are in studio right now want to see even less violence. But Kevin and Bea, when you hear a comment like that, perception sometimes to some is reality. What would you say to someone like Jack?
We need to fill the space with positive activity. We can't really control human behavior, but I'm just a believer in fill the space with what you want. If you don't fill it, you don't really know what the outcome. The other thing is people need opportunity. We have a graduation rate that really needs to be addressed here. And we have high unemployment in some communities.
Violence is really just connected. I mean, it's so connected to poverty, isn't it?
It definitely is. And I use this analogy. I say the risk factor. If a person is working, they are less apt to commit a crime. You might go out. You might party, but at the back of your head, you're thinking, I need to support my family. I need to support myself. So you might go home and you might not, you know, might deal with the argument in a different way. But I think the more people that are engaged in positive activity, which we need to be involved with that, we need to help companies that are trying to, we need to support companies. But fill it with positive space. And, you know, we talk about live, work, and play. We need more play. And we on the government side, we need to loosen our ties a little bit. We have a very strict codes in the city. So we have to be really open-minded and be neighbors. Well, I don't want to get too far in that, but, you know, I grew up in a time where you knew your neighbor. I teach my children the same thing. We pick up trash in my neighborhood. You know, and in a lot of ways now, we've gotten away from that. But I'll stop there.
Oh, yeah. and we could do a whole hour on this, but let me ask you, Gideon Nadine. Jack is asking, do other cities have problems with crime? And of course they do, but what would you say to someone like Jack who's looking at Rochester, probably rooting for Rochester, sees what he sees on the nightly news? What would you say, Gideon?
I think your perception, or your point about perception was a really good one, Evan. And there's no coincidence that the renaissance of American downtowns sort of happened at the same time as the business improvement district resurgence in American cities, because their core mission is clean and safe. And making sure that people feel safe when they're downtown and that it looks like it's maintained and well cared for is really important for getting both people comfortable hanging out downtown, spending money downtown, as well as attracting that investment that's going to be there.
Yeah, can I just add
Nadine,
that,
go ahead.
And, you know, I hate to keep bringing it back to Oakland, California, but it is my hometown, so I'm very happy to be talking about it here. But it's a great example of a downtown that was very, you know, had a lot of issues with crime. And now the downtown is, you know, it's a vibrant, interesting place, and it's filled with retail, but it's also a place where that has jobs for people in the community. And the city's actively trying to link people to those jobs. And it's a really important place for kids and there are neighborhoods where you don't go to that neighborhood if you're from this other neighborhood. But the downtown is a safe place for everyone. And there's a lot of institutions downtown that help to foster that, which also helps to prevent crime and helps to create opportunities for people.
And Nadine, don't you think there is a bit of a lag when it comes to reputation and reality. You know, for example, Oakland, let me speak totally out of ignorance because I have not been to Oakland. I've been to San Francisco. I don't know much about Oakland.
You should come.
Well, right. But I'll tell you, if somebody would have stopped me yesterday and just said, hey, what do you know about Oakland? I probably would have said close to nothing other than I think it is the unsafe side of the bay. And there's a lot of problems that they've had over years with violence. So what you're telling me is exciting. It makes me feel ignorant about it, but it also is a reminder that there's probably a lag in the way reputations are formed and then the way information reaches people and is understood by the broader public.
Oh, I think that's absolutely true. Even just walking over here today, I mean, from what I'd heard about Rochester, I expected it to not be as interesting and beautiful as the streets that I was walking down today with such interesting architecture and with small, you know, small local businesses. So, you know, perception is not always reality and it does lag.
Well, a friend of mine texted me who was listening to the program who would know, and she says 8 homicides this year so far. I think that's roughly around. So that's about 1 every 9 days. It's more than anybody wants, but it's also not every day. And I think as Bea and I think as the panel says here, it's connected to poverty and economic development is connected to fixing poverty. So that's part of the broader discussion here. I'm late for a break. Let's take a very short break. We'll come right back. Danny in Brighton will come to you. And if you want to call the program and join the conversation about improving our city in various ways here, Rochester is one of the 4 Rose cities. Denver, Long Beach, California, Birmingham, Alabama, and Rochester have this opportunity this year to tackle various land use challenges, Rochester focusing on the Broad Street Aqueduct, the Genesee Riverfront, and Main Street. But I think as we're hearing here, we're talking about improvement across the city. Those specific components, yes, but how to build a better city going forward here. So your phone call's coming up here after this short break on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, Science on the Screen is back at the Little Theater next week. And the film this time around is Psycho. So what's the science of Psycho? Well, we're talking about the psychology of filmmaking, of editing, of creating a thriller, of how our minds work when we take in movies like Psycho. Join the conversation next hour.
Chaka Sengor served 19 years in prison for killing a man in Detroit. At first, he racked up dozens of disciplinary violations behind bars, but he says mentors and reading helped him change.
I'm a firm believer in the power of the written word.
Now he's a spokesman for the idea that people can reform. His story later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
This afternoon at 4 on WXXI.
Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our guests from out of town are Gideon Berger, Program Director of the Daniel Rose Fellowship Program at the Rose Center for Public Leadership and Land Use. And where, Gideon? Where is that?
It's based in Washington, but I'm based in Denver.
You're based in Denver. So welcome. Nadine Fogarty, Vice President of Strategic Economics, here from Berkeley, California, originally a native of Oakland, as we've been talking about, and a proud native of Oakland.
That's right.
All right. Kevin Kelly is here from the city of Rochester. Bea Mohammed here from the city of Rochester. They wear a number of different hats, but they're also going to be working on, well, kind of leading this effort as Rochester is a 2016 Rose City. I want to get back to the phone here, and Danny in Brighton next up. Go ahead, Danny.
Hi. I hope I can get across the 2 levels of comments that I wanted to make. And the first one is that what I haven't heard is any discussion about the amazing dance world that we have here in Rochester. We have some phenomenal dance companies that perform all over the place. We also have great dance departments at the many universities here, and we also have the only freestanding institute in the entire country that offers all the courses to become trained as a dance movement therapist. So there's this wonderful world of dance, and somehow we need to find a way to integrate. You know, I had a fantasy. Well, why don't they make a beautiful, you know, performance center in the High Falls or something like that, because I know there's been talk about that. But in any case, there's this great arts world here, too, that I don't want to see get lost. And most of us who are in the dance world, I do run that Dance Therapy Institute, are not like great business people. We could use some assistance from people who understand about business, So, for example, my institute is right next to a bunch of housing area that looks like it's low-income housing, and I would like to go in there and bring people into my place and be able to experience dance therapy. But I'm so busy trying to make sure that everything gets paid that there's no way to do that. And in attempts to try to get financial support, people will say, well, you've been in business too long, or we don't do the arts. And at one time, the city was, I was really working with them, and we were doing art walk. So just the wonderful arts community that we have is getting lost.
All right. Well, Daniel, yeah. let me just because I don't want to lose the hour here, let me just go ahead and let our guests respond there. So, Kevin and Bea, what would you say to Dani, her concern she raised there, and a lot of passion in that phone call for the arts and for Rochester? Kevin, I'll start with you. What would
sure.
you say?
Yeah, I think the arts is critical to downtown's resurgence and the city overall, and we have a fantastic arts community here. I continuously hear from folks that are out of town, that when they learn about all the different things that are happening in the arts community here, they're kind of surprised at the critical mass relative to the size of the city. And so I think we have a lot of things that are going on. I don't know if I would characterize it as being lost, even though we haven't brought it up in the conversation yet. It's a big part of what we're looking at here for downtown. And there's more to be done, but let's not overlook all that has been accomplished here in the city.
Gideon and Nadine, how big of a presence do you see? Well, we had a recent discussion on this program about what makes a city on the rise or successful. Jim Fallows is a journalist who kind of toured the country and wrote an article recently for The Atlantic on 11 signs that make a city successful. I'm wondering where the arts play. How often, when you are in a city that is on the rise, that are doing the right things, do arts have a prominent role?
I think they're incredibly important, especially in the context of downtown, because our downtowns tend to be our cultural centers for our regions. And Nadine was talking about kind of finding your strengths as a city and running with those. You know, if dance and these other cultural institutions are part of what put Rochester on the map and what draw people from around the region and around the state to Rochester, they've got to be celebrated. And they also give this incredible creative energy because of the people that are in it and that link to the university as well. So I think that's a tremendous asset to be building on.
Nadine, agree?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I couldn't have said it better.
Well, let me get back to the phones then. And this is Robert in Fairport next up. Go ahead, Robert.
Yeah, I think that the comparison with Oakland, there's a lot of differences there. I think one thing that is lifting Oakland is the high price of rentals in the San Francisco area. Most people don't realize that if you apply for rental housing in San Francisco, you have to apply for it like it's a job. So that's something that's completely different. Oakland is a much cheaper place to live than San Francisco. The other point is, I wonder how much a role Uber and Lyft might play in kind of revitalizing a city like Oakland. I, having been in San Francisco and used Uber there, it just seems like that easy transportation does play a major role in helping revitalize an area.
Thanks for the phone call, Robert. We've talked about Uber and Lyft on this program in recent weeks. I don't know that the state legislature, if you just as a reset, I think Uber and Lyft are allowed in Manhattan, otherwise outside New York City in this state, not allowed. And there's been some pressure on the legislature to change that. I don't think that's changed here. We saw Lyft here a couple of summers ago for a couple of months, I think, if I remember correctly. We had a good conversation on this program about it. A lot of people want to see it. Bea and Kevin, what do you know? I mean, is the city advocating in one way or another on that?
Not advocating, listening.
Listening.
But I think that opens up another conversation of transportation in general. We know we need more outlets with our public transportation and our running and walking path and biking options. So that's something that we're looking at on a grand scale.
Okay, Kevin?
Yeah, we've made some really fantastic advancements in terms of bicycle infrastructure, bike lanes and sharrows and bike paths and such. And we have a couple of things that are on the near horizon now. We're likely to proceed with some sort of a bike share system. We're going to look at some different vendors and see what they might offer here in Rochester. So that's a possibility. And we're looking at doing the possibility of restarting the Center City Circulator. There's another transportation option for downtown. So there's a lot going on, and we just really want to take this holistic perspective when it comes to transportation in terms of promoting all different modes of transportation and not just designing cities for cars.
Our out-of-town guests want to weigh in at all on some of the, what you just heard regarding transportation?
Well, clearly downtown's one of the, you know, one of the benefits of being in a downtown is you usually have the opportunity to walk and to bike or and you have access to public other types of public transportation, and in some cases Uber and Lyft, and those are some of the things that make downtowns fun, easy places to live, and why people are wanting to locate in downtowns to, you know, either their businesses or to live.
Mm-hmm. Gideon?
At the risk of opening a Pandora's box, I think this also relates to parking. And in the downtown context, you know, parking can be antithetical to the activities that we want to see downtown. So transit and all these other modes that we're talking about become incredibly important. You know, once you create a destination, you need to provide access to it that works for everybody in your region and in your city. So, you know, in Denver, we have our 16th Street Mall Shuttle, which has been one of the building blocks for our success in our downtown going back to the early 80s. And that is a circulator type concept that's free that gets everyone in and around downtown. So at least you can have sort of a park once strategy.
All right, I want to take a call from Maya in Rochester. And my producer, Megan, tells me Maya is 6 years old. Calling in. Go ahead, Maya.
How do we get more families and kids to come downtown?
Thank you for the phone call, Maya. It's a great question. How do we get more families and kids downtown? Well, let me start with the Rochester folks, and then we'll broaden it out. And Maya, thank you for calling the program, and you and your family for caring about your city. Bea, I want to start with you. Bea Muhammad from the city of Rochester.
I would say thank you, Maya, for calling in. That's really brave. We need to listen to children. We need to involve children in our decision-making process. I would say that. Children, they know a lot. They have brains. I know my children, they're going to be smarter than me, which I want. But I think we need to get them more involved in our process.
Okay, Kevin?
And that was one of our lessons learned from our trip to Nashville, which, you know, we've seen parts of that, but it was really obvious when we were in Nashville that they are embracing this concept of play. Play in their public spaces, play in their downtown.
Give me an example that stands out to you from Nashville.
The design of the riverfront parks, it's not just about a linear path to get from here to there. You have these sort of whimsical, undulating paths with different amenities along the way. They have, you know, these outdoor porch swings and public art and different places that encourage you to just stop and engage and enjoy the urban environment and not just go from point A to point B. And we saw a lot of people downtown that were just engaging in that. So that concept of play, I think, is really important in bringing families into downtown.
All right, out-of-town guests, how you want to answer Maya's question on, you know, what works in other cities? He mentioned Nashville. Bea said we got to listen to kids. What would you say about bringing more families and kids downtown?
Yeah, another great example of public space on the theme that Kevin was talking about is Campus Martius in Detroit. It's just 2.5 acres. But that has become the activity center for downtown, and it's really family-oriented. So activities like ice skating, you know, and fairs and horticultural activity and educational things that are happening, but reasons for families to come to these public spaces and spend time together as a family downtown are really important.
Yeah, we often hear about something called the multiplier effect when it comes to economic development, and sometimes, well, I'm a skeptic on everything until I see numbers, but boy, as a parent now, I see it. You know, my son and I will go downtown because maybe we'll go to the Strong, and then, you know, we'll kick over to Java's because he can get a kid's hot chocolate, and he loves walking around Jazz Street. He always calls it Jazz Street, whether it's Jazz Festival or not. You know, and those are the things that not only get you there, but then you're there for the day, and you're walking, and you're popping in, and maybe you're eating. So, Maya, great phone call, and I appreciate that. What I want to do before I get back to the phones, because our phones are lit up here, real briefly, Gideon, remind our listeners as we kind of go throughout the year, now Rochester is undertaking this effort this year with three other cities. How do people follow the progress, for example?
Sure. So this week we have a team of 12 folks from around the country that are in town to meet with local stakeholders, to tour the downtown, and provide a public presentation on Friday morning at the Little Theater from 9 to 11 a.m., where they'll be sharing their observations and, most importantly, their recommendations for the city moving ahead for ideas that they could be looking to implement. So it'll be great for folks to come and participate in that process. There'll be a Q&A.
And again, when is that?
That's going to be Friday morning from 9 to 11 a.m. at the Little Theater.
Very good. And then going forward beyond that, you know, there's so many different cities that are Rose Cities that you've been working with around the country. I know you'll let us check in once in a while, but how do you advise people to sort of stay on top of what's going on?
Absolutely. So you can check out our website, www.danielrosecenter.org. There is a Rochester page. We'll be posting presentation that we give on Friday on that website as well. And then you'll be able to sort of follow as we have reports to add as well. And then we would definitely encourage the city, the mayor, and the team to continue to engage with the folks that we'll be meeting with this week in both public meetings and smaller group meetings to keep the momentum alive. Hopefully we'll be generating a lot of momentum about the ideas.
All right, I want to read two emails and then get to one phone call all on the same subject here. So let me start here. This is from Molly Beth. He writes, Evan, I've got a question for Bea and Kevin regarding the recent interest in downtown housing investment and the city's guiding role. A lot of the investment we've seen is luxury housing, with rents often exceeding $1,200 a month for studios and one bedrooms, while the target groups often mentioned for growing downtown are millennials, young professionals, and empty nesters. HUD defines affordable housing at no more than 30% of a household's income, which at $1,200 a month is often not realistic for this class of young talent, retirees, or the urban pioneers we're looking to bring to downtown. You can make the argument that Rochester is seeking a certain level of gentrification, but how is the city going to ensure that affordability is preserved for these groups, as well as those who currently live downtown? Many people who can afford these apartments aren't actually making roots here. So how do we foster growth and attraction among those who already live in the greater Rochester area and are invested in our future? So that is from Molly. Then, before we can respond here, let me get Ellen follows up and says, to your guest from Oakland, my daughter lives in Oakland now, and I don't know anything much about Oakland, but from what I've heard from her, and that is that real estate and rentals have gone way up in price because of the influx of more higher income people. And although it sounds like Oakland is making a lot of progress from what your guests say, some of the locals might feel differently about that. But then again, I'm certainly not an expert. I only know what I've been told about that. So again, that's kind of a conversation on growing while maintaining people living there, you know, guarding against some of the deleterious effects of gentrification, et cetera. And then Chris, who has been waiting on line two, wants to weigh in on sort of the same subject. So Chris, go ahead, and then our panel can respond to all of this. Go ahead, Chris.
Hi, thanks, Evan. I think that those responses kind of took the wind out of my sails.
No, go ahead, though.
I just wanted to ask, given that development is usually in the form of restaurants and lofts and retail that are catered to higher-income residents, how can we make sure that the city, the entire city, benefits from a transformation? And is there an inherent conflict between private sector investment and investing in the public sector?
Thanks for the phone call, Chris. So let's do this. Let's kind of go around the table now, because we've heard three different perspectives, similar themes. I'm going to start with Kevin, and we'll go around the table. Go ahead, Kevin.
Sure. Well, in terms of affordability, I mean, citywide, this is an incredibly affordable city to live in compared to the rest of the nation. I toured around a few of our panelists last night, and you should have seen their jaws hit the floor when I told them how much I paid for my house here in the city. So there are affordable options throughout the city. But in terms of downtown, yeah, the rents are quite a bit higher, and it is not necessarily affordable for the entirety of the millennial generation or the entirety of the empty nester demographic that we have. But there is enough of a percentage of folks that can afford to do it, and they're paying those rents. So there's that. But then we also have to, you know, from the city's perspective, it's very important to us to promote mixed income housing in the city, whether it's downtown or in the neighborhoods. That's very difficult to achieve, but it is our objective. So in a number of the projects that we have happening in downtown where there's a residential component, we are working with the developers to have a affordable housing component to it. So in the Sibley Tower and some other projects like that, there is an affordable piece.
Okay, Bam?
I really don't have too much to add. I know the affordability piece, that is a high priority for the mayor. It's a high priority for our department. We want to make sure that we have more mixed income opportunities in the city. We've met with the state about that. They support our efforts, and we just look to go forward and trying to create a well-rounded community.
Okay, and Gideon and Nadine, again, they're from out of town. They've seen so many cities around the country. These questions come up just about everywhere you go. It's kind of the good growth, or, you know, how do you grow and still maintain? Gideon, I'll start with you. How would you address some of these concerns?
Yeah, I'd say no city feels like they have enough tools in the policy toolbox on this end, but, you know, we can certainly help provide that perspective about what's working around the country, you know, so whether it's something like an inclusionary housing policy that requires a certain number of affordable units as part of a new development, or whether it's conditions that are put on, as the caller suggested, when there's public money in the game, that there are some requirements for public and community benefits as part of those deals. Those are all things that, you know, cities are trying to find the right balance to both make projects pencil and keep developers interested and profitable, but also deliver those benefits and get the kind of outcomes that really benefit the whole city.
Okay. Nadine?
Yeah, I mean, I just second everything that everyone else has said. I think, I mean, every city I'm working in right now is struggling with this same question on some level, no matter where you are in terms of whether you're a place that is, you know, like Seattle or San Francisco or Honolulu that's booming, or whether you're a place that's just starting to see investment and people are beginning to be afraid of what potential negative outcomes could come from that. And I think it's about having the right policies in place and trying to balance and make sure that the investment is able to come, but that it benefits everyone.
Is there any city that stands out right now as the gold standard for doing this effectively? I mean, I know it's not easy. There's not a silver bullet for this problem, but
there's a lot of experimentation going on right now. You know, Nadine mentioned Seattle, where they're sort of charging developers a fee to create a trust fund that the city can use to help subsidize affordable housing and workforce housing around the city. That's a brand new change. In Denver, we had an inclusionary housing policy for a long time that said if you built more than 30 units, 10% had to be affordable. So some developers did the math and built 29 units. So we changed that policy now so that it's more responsive to the conditions in the neighborhood rather than taking a citywide approach. But I'd say there's another link to this too, Evan, which is the link that Bea was talking about, which is about economic inclusion as well. We also need to be thinking about, in our cities, how can the citizens benefit from this economic investment so that they are creating value for themselves too? And that comes from this entrepreneurship angle and the workforce development angle. So as these new jobs and investment come to the city, lots of people can create wealth on a personal and household level so they can afford what's getting built, and they can create value for themselves.
Let's try to squeeze in a couple more listener comments. This is Glenn in Rochester. Go ahead, Glenn.
Hey, Evan. It's Glenn Kellogg.
Hi, Glenn.
Owner of Hearts, and also with Urban Advisors. So, hi, Nadine. I know you're your competition on that, but you're doing a great job here. I wanted to chime in about some surprising things and respond to the young lady who called and wanted to know about how to get families into downtown. One of the things that I didn't expect when we opened Hearts as a small format grocery store was how kid-friendly it is. That a lot of the things that make downtowns walkable also make them kid-friendly. And it was kind of an amazing thing to me to discover that even though we weren't building a store that was aiming to be family-friendly, we were expecting to have young professionals, students, empty nesters. It turned out that the small format was really great that parents can let their kids wander through the store. It's really accessible.
Glenn, it sounds to me also like when we use the term walkability or pedestrian friendly, sometimes maybe we ought to reframe it, and I'm not in the branding business, but what you're saying is that's also kid friendly, and we often don't use that term.
That's exactly what I'm saying.
Well, Glenn, thanks for the phone call, and I will say I watched my young son boogie into a little bit of music on Bach on the Subway. They do for Bach's birthday. Well, we don't have a subway here, so Hearts actually did a music performance. We happened to be there, and my son loved that too. So those are the little things that are big things for parents, and it's a great point from Glenn. I saw Gideon, you nodding that, you know, walkability also means kid-friendly, you know, which probably is, I don't know why we don't talk about that more, but it's so obvious.
Back in Denver, I chair Walk Denver in my free time, which is our pedestrian advocacy organization, and we say it's important to design cities for the people that are most vulnerable. And if it works for them, it works for everybody.
All right, very good. Well, we've got about 90 seconds left here. So Gideon and Nadine, you guys are going to leave Rochester. When do you fly out? When are you done here?
Friday afternoon. We hope we have time for a garbage plate maybe on the way out of town.
You're learning quickly about local customs there. But Nadine, what do you expect to kind of take with you from this kind of a trip? Let our listeners know again if they're just sort of tuning in late. What do you expect to leave with?
For us to leave?
Sure, yeah.
We have a group of panelists who are coming in from around the country, and we're going to be having a pretty intensive week of meeting people and talking about the land use challenge that the mayor and the other folks from the city have chosen. And we're hoping to just learn a lot and give some hopefully good advice, and leave the city with some homework at the end of the week, of what they can be doing over the next year.
Okay, and Bayo, what are your expectations as a Rose City for 2016? Now these parts of our city that a lot of people would love to see developed, the Broad Street Aqueduct, the Genesee Riverfront, Main Street, and development means different things to different people. But 30 seconds, what are your hopes now as a Rose City?
We just want to get good ideas, and like Nadine said, the homework assignments that we can go back and work with our partners in the community to make the city better. So we want to activate Main Street. We want to try to figure out what we need to do with the aqueduct, and we want to further develop the river.
Thanks for being here. Thanks for taking the time to come in and answer a lot of listener questions. And listeners, if you didn't get through on the phones or through various ways of communicating, took as many as we can, but I absolutely appreciate it. I know our guests do too. And it's a conversation that will continue with Rochester as a 2016 Rose City. Our thanks to the team who came into the studio today to tell us more about that. You just heard Bay Mohammed, Commissioner for the Department of Neighborhood and Business Development of the city. Bay, nice to have you. Thanks for being here.
Appreciate you.
Kevin Kelly, City Planner. Great to have you, Kevin. Thanks for being here.
It's been a pleasure.
Gideon Berger, enjoy your next few days here in Rochester. Welcome, and thanks for taking the time.
Thanks.
And Nadine Fogarty, Vice President of Strategic Economics, thanks for taking the time as well. Enjoy the time in Rochester.
Oh, thank you. I will.
All right, short break, and we're talking psychology on screen next hour.